listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, Dallas. Hi.
Hello, Alona.
Hello, Alona.
Hello, this is Ilona Europa in studio LA Talk Radio, and I have with me on my right side Stephanie Mack, and she is my wonderful friend, and she speaks perfect English, and she just is taking care of our sound. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Alona.
And today's show is a really, really very, very, very special, very energetic, and very exciting for me. We have beautiful guests. John, would you like to introduce our guest?
I would, yes. Sure. So we have on the show today, I guess, an amazing woman. Her name is Dr. Estella Snyder. And Dr. Estella Snyder is the mother-in-law of Kyle Richards, one of the reality stars of Bravo TV's popular The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which I must say that I'm addicted to watching. I admit it. But Dr. Estella Snyder knows firsthand about the good, the bad, and the ugly of reality TV stardom. Her son Mauricio Lomofsky has been married to Kyle Richards for 16 years. Now, let me just tell you just a little bit, Alona, about Dr. Snyder. This woman is the founder and clinical director of Options Clinical Center in Beverly Hills. She's been treating patients for a variety of mental health issues, including anxiety, depression, addiction, and sexual dysfunction, which I know nothing about. I've never had anything to do with it, for individuals, couples, and families.
But Dr.
Snyder received her PhD and her MA in psychology from the California Graduate Institute. Now, let me just tell you about some of her professional memberships, because this list is long, but it's so impressive, so impressive. Dr. Snyder is a member of the California Psychological Association. She's a member of the California Hispanic Psychological Association, Society of Modern Psychoanalysts. She's a member of the California Marriage and Family Therapists. She's a member of the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapists, the American Pain Society, the American Board of Sex Educators, and she's a member of the American Board of Sexology. Please welcome the most amazing woman that you're going to get to spend a whole hour with, Dr. Estella Snyder.
Yay!
Welcome, Dr. Estella Snyder.
Yay!
Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, my goodness. You know, what a presentation. I didn't expect all of that, but thank you so much.
I know, doctor. How did you do all of this? How? You are so young, so beautiful, and so very, 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 very special. I have so many questions for you, but how? How did you do it all?
Well, you know, determination, definitely, really wanting to achieve my goals, and, you know, that's very, very important. How did all of this started? You know, maybe we would need more than an hour show, but I can tell you briefly, you know, my history since I was a very young kid. My friends used to come to me to tell me their problems and look for solutions and bounce back what was going on in their lives. And also myself, you know, many times in the ups and downs of my life, because we all have them, and now with reality shows, we can see that we all have the dramas in our lives. Basically, you know, I used to read a lot of psychology, even since teenage years, because I wanted to have like an understanding of the human psyche. Then later on in my life, I got married very, very young. I was 18 years old when I got married. I was barely 19 when I lost my father, and I was pregnant with Mauricio when that happened in the first 3 months. Oh. And 2 weeks after my father died, I ended up having an appendix surgery. Why I'm telling you this is because of this, I end up with terrible and horrible panic attacks. I started with one, and I started debilitating my life. Constantly, I was thinking that I was going to die, that I couldn't breathe. I'd get going from
Was this at an early age that you started to have panic attacks, or...
Yes, it just like suddenly.
How old were you when you hit?
I was 19 years old when this happened, and in my search for knowing what was happening, of course, at the beginning I thought that it was like physically related, organically related. I kept going to doctors, and everybody kept sending me to the psychologist, and I kept thinking, you know, they're crazy. You know, I'm not crazy. I don't need a therapist. So anyway, finally, after like a couple of years, a very dear internist of the family sat down with me in one of the panic attacks, and he said to me, please do me a favor and just go to one session. And that started my sessions in my own analysis.
Wow.
And needless to say, I overcame my panic attacks, and I decided to definitely go into the career of psychology. Because prior to
Dr. Snyder, I have a question for you. So about panic attacks, since you brought up the subject of panic attacks. Now, I know for a lot of people who don't have them, they don't understand the psychoses of a panic attack. But it literally feels like you're about to die at any second of a heart attack or impending doom. And I think my understanding of panic attacks is that it's really a rewiring in the brain that causes that. And so it's not just an imagined feeling. It almost feels like a physical feeling. Is that correct?
Well, it is experienced physically, you know, basically because we start hyperventilating, and it creates a lot of physiological changes that we don't understand. And then the mind starts doing the trick. What is going on with me? When we don't understand something, we fill in the blanks. And we start feeling the blank that we're dying, when maybe we're over-oxygenating, we're putting too much oxygen into our body when we hyperventilate, and we start feeling like we're in a dream and that we cannot breathe, and, you know, needles in our face, numbness in our arms, and we start interpreting that as impending doom. And that creates, you know, the first panic attack, and then we become afraid of the feeling itself.
Of course.
Wow.
We feel that it's coming, and then we are worrying even more. And yeah, this is very, very hard disease to overcome. But thankfully... Yeah, I said it thankfully for doctors.
Yeah, I guess that John became very, you know, interested in the panic attack issue when I was just using it as to explain, you know, what made me so interested in the career of psychology. But they were, as I told you, you know, we would need to spend the whole show, you know.
It's so funny because I used to be a paramedic, and I worked in psychiatric wards, and I always found it interesting because a lot of psychiatrists that I work with always have became psychiatrists or psychoanalysts because of something in their own past that they were trying to work through. And in doing that, they discover the power, right, the power of the mind. And so I think it's a really great, it's a higher calling. So I really admire people who go into your field because you really impact people's lives in such a direct and serious nature, right? So I think
that in any profession it's almost like a sublimation, you know, and it's a healthy way of overcoming something that is within us with something that is going to be productive to ourselves and society.
John, we have so many questions for Dr. Estella, but I know that Accent On will not be Accent On if we will not hear your voice presenting Fireflies for today's show. And Dr. Estella, I don't know if you know, but John Johnson almost every Monday is opening our show with just really nice thoughts for today. And I cannot wait. What did you prepare, John, for us today? And then I think later we'll introduce also Dr. DJ Verrett from Dallas, plastic surgeon, who will be joining us for discussion with Dr. Estella Snyder.
Sure.
Snyder. Yes?
Oh, thank you, Lana.
Okay, John,
right, so
it's your time.
Okay, so it's my time. So, all right. So this is Sean Thompson for another edition of Firefly, Inspiration to Ignite the Soul. So tonight I want to talk about why judging others is really a reflection of ourselves. So here's the thing. If we learn to open our hearts, anyone, including the people who drive us crazy, can be our teachers. I've learned that each encounter provides the gift of greater self-awareness by showing us the path to accept or reject our self-perception of who we believe we are. An honest look will show you that the reactions you have to others really give you more information about yourself than about them. So let me give you an example. So sometimes you cannot be certain of people's motives, but how we react to them, positive or negative, will reveal certain truths about ourselves. For example, if someone makes a remark about you and it's something that you also judge in yourself, it will most likely hurt. However, if they make the same remark and you don't have that judgment about it, then it probably doesn't bother you at all. You see, reactions always have to do with our own self-judgments and our feelings of inadequacy or strength, not the other person. So first, you wouldn't tolerate the same behavior or characteristic in yourself. For instance, you might be shy and encounter a very gregarious person, right? So you might come to judgment about that person by thinking, my gosh, that person's a show-off, they're so loud and obnoxious, because you would be embarrassed to act this way yourself, right? So the reality is that this type of judgment might reveal more about you not being able to fully express yourself than it really does about the other person. So here's the bottom line. The final example I'll give you is you're envious and you resent the feelings that come up, so you find something wrong with those who have what you want and you end up judging them. So in this example, someone who has attained recognition may remind you of your own lack of success in a particular area, and you may resent their higher degree of accomplishment. And then you find something wrong with them in order to avoid your own feelings of inadequacy. Since inspiration is a much more effective motivator than competition, you'd be more likely to experience success if you got inspired by other people's victories instead of wasting your time finding fault with them. Because here's what I've learned in life. Most judgments of others are really ego strategies to avoid uncomfortable feelings. However, if you lack the awareness of where they come from, they can lead to even more discomfort down the line. Because becoming aware of the nature of your judgments doesn't mean that you no longer have them. What it means is that you may still notice certain types of behavior that you don't like. But in the end, what it means is that, you know, you recognize them as why they're unappealing, right? And so because they resonate with you. Because when you explore beliefs and assumptions, instead of judging people, you open a door to expanded self-awareness and self-acceptance. Rather than unconsciously delighting in the ego gratification of judging others, you let your reactions and your judgments help you achieve greater self-understanding and accordingly, greater happiness and success. Because, now here's the lesson. When you use your judgment of others as a mirror to show you the workings of your own mind, every person's reflection can become a valuable gift, making each person you encounter a teacher and a blessing. For more of my thoughts or to share your stories, visit the John Johnson official fan page on Facebook or follow me on Twitter at JohnsCat, JONSCAT. For Firefly, this is John Johnson. Start living your life like the dreams you have are real.
Yay.
Now back to Lana and DJ.
Oh, thank you, John. This is so, like always, very interesting. And I think your topic today about judging people or judging ourselves is perfectly connected with what we will be asking our guest, okay? Because I'm sure we like to gossip, we like to watch people's lives, we like to judge them, and what is the best then watch reality show and just, you know, sometimes really, really see ourselves in the problems of all of the stars. And what do you think, Dr. DJ Verrett? Are you all watching all the shows that we are talking about or not?
You know, I've seen a few of them, and it's kind of like what you said. It's interesting kind of being a voyeur and seeing into other people's lives. So I was really interested when Dr. Snyder agreed to come on the show because I'd be interested to hear her take on reality TV and what her professional opinion is on why it's become such a successful genre.
Yeah, doctor.
Well, you know, I guess that in a way to watch a reality show, we're watching not per se an actor, even though I have to say that my daughter-in-law herself and Kim, her sister, are actors themselves, and they've been actors since they were like young kids. But there's many reality shows in which anybody has the opportunity to participate in a reality show, and that a possibility makes it very, very appealing for the general population. And also the networks love that because anybody, even people who don't like reality shows, they're going to watch the show if they have somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who happens to be in the reality show. So they end up being very, very appealing. The people, the viewers, can identify and relate to the problems of their own by watching the real lives that are being played out in reality shows. It demystifies also the idea, for example, in all of the Real Housewives, you know, from all of the cities, that rich people don't have problems or drama. You know, a lot of people think like, oh my gosh, if I just make money and I'm rich, all my problems are going to be solved. And suddenly they're seeing on these reality shows that all of these catfights and conflicts and problems, and unfortunately, you know, we have even seen suicide in one of the shows, and I just mentioned it, but I don't want to talk about it.
Sure.
They, you know, the people, you know, can either use the show to motivate oneself to achieve or to fight for their own goals. And
you know,
they
Dr.
see
Snyder,
all of this being played out in the family. Yes.
You know, Dr. Snyder, one of the things that I think reality TV does is it really shines a mirror back on ourselves, because I think what, like, for instance, like the Bravo Housewife series, I think what that really shows America is that we're all really the same people, regardless of our social economic backgrounds and our stance in life or what we do for a living. I think what it shows us is that we all have certain commonalities, right? We love, we hurt, we want to be accepted, you know, regardless of fame or fortune. So in a lot of ways, I think reality TV is sort of good. And like, for instance, like I think, like your daughter, Kyle Richards, I think she's amazing on that show. She always, I think, shows herself in such grace and kindness. And, you know, I just really admire her, and her sister have been so brave to share some of their stories on reality TV, and those kind of situations help other people going through the same thing. So I really admire them for doing that, because I don't know too many people other than some politicians who can really put themselves out there like they do on reality TV. Do you feel like a lot of reality TV really shows that we're all the same?
No, not necessarily. You know, actually, not definitely. You know, you have all kinds of reality shows. You have reality shows for the performer, like Dancing with the Stars, American Idol. You have the Gossip Lovers reality shows, the Celebrity Obsessed reality shows, you know, like The Osbournes, and the romantic shows like The Bachelors or The Bachelorette or Love for Money. You have for the artists, like, you know, the house makeover that can even motivate people to go out and help your neighbor. So there's all kinds of reality shows now that have been appealing to the viewers.
Well, and I have a question kind of from the other side, since you and your family are involved in the reality show. What really brought them to want to participate in the shows?
Well, I think that the idea, I don't know really much about it, but I think that the idea was brought to my daughter-in-law, and my daughter-in-law, actually, she was, as far as I know, very, very hesitant because she's an actress, and to her it was very difficult, you know, to suddenly be in a reality show. And there was, as far as I know, a lot of talk with the family, between them, the nuclear family. And, you know, it was until they had made a decision that you know, they told me and my ex-husband and the rest of the family, the extended family, my daughter, that they're going to be involved in this reality show. So basically, you know, I think that they I really admire them because they took so many things into consideration. And they, at the end, I think that from everything that I have seen, if anything, it has helped them to be even closer and to watch even closer their values, their family values, because it becomes like so much harder, you know, when you're being followed by the paparazzi, you know, all the time as they are, you know, to not lose sight of the priorities, which is the family, and they have been very, very good at it. Actually, they're going to be 17 years married in January.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's amazing.
Oh,
wow.
I would like to ask one question, because we are talking about Kylie Richards, but
Kyle,
and I am, of course, a woman, and I love watching your son. First, he is a beautiful man. Very, very handsome and very smart and very successful. And he's a lovely husband and father. And just the family seems like really, really happy. Like you mentioned, nice and very close family. The baby, I just love to watch them. To me, this is like perfect family. And I wish they will be forever this way. Do you see the difference between when reality TV step into their kitchen and start filming their lives? Or you mentioned they're closer right now, but do you see a little bit minus also, you know, when cameras follow them everywhere? Is this something that maybe your son doesn't like, or I don't know. Is the difference right now that how was before?
No, I don't think it's not at all, you know. Basically, I think that, you know, they even, like, you know, disregards all of the cameras and what have you. You know, the only difference is that they're way very busy, you know, all the time. Because, you know, the success that the show has had, you know, had put them in a very good place where they can do other activities, get involved in charities.
Of course.
Getting invited to so many things that their social life is so active and so busy that, if anything, sometimes, you know, it takes away a little bit from family time, but more so family time with the extended family, not with the nuclear family, which is themselves and the children. They make sure to have dinner as often as possible, all of them together, and to sit on the table and talk, and I really, really admire that.
Oh. But again,
you know, one of the things, like I said, one of the things that I think that, you know, if you were on a reality show, or one of the things, if I was on a reality show, the thing that I kind of like about it is that it gives you the opportunity to see how other people might perceive you, right? And you can go like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I acted like that, or I talked like that, or I think it's a great mirror unto yourself, right? I think what a great opportunity for some people to have that gift.
About to say that psychologically you're touching on a very important subject, because it's not as much, as anthropologists say, you know, it's not as much what you do that is important to people, that what they perceive you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
And,
yep.
And,
that's a great point.
And, you know, kind of in a way, you know, even though, you know, the viewers are seeing a part of your life, it's only a part of your life, and they have to be very careful, as you said, you know, judgment to others is based on very, very little information. And I can tell you that it's very, very little information, because, you know, not because of the reality show, because of what I feel and I know as a psychologist. You know, one of the surprising things in my career is to realize how much we don't know about ourselves, and how much we share of ourselves to others, really, and what are the parts that we keep inside. You know, it's almost like a bag that we carry, and you don't know what is inside the bag, and you get to see only the outside of the bag. So, you know, we end up being judged from what we show, and also from what the perceiver sees, which may not be accurate.
That's such a great point.
A lot of weight of projection.
But
it's just it's just because you're just seeing a small few minutes of somebody's life. Well, it's interesting,
it's a small
glimpse
of what's going on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When I used to work for Oprah, Oprah used to say, Oprah used to say all the time, you hear people say, they become famous and now they're stuck up or they're not very nice and like Oprah says, fame doesn't really change you. What fame does is it sort of magnifies who you already are. So if you were kind of a jerk before you were famous, you've just become a bigger jerk. Or if you're a kind, generous person, it magnifies, you become more generous. So
I
don't think
exactly
really changes
some people, you. Yeah, the people who see themselves above everybody else and not like, before, they're going to see themselves even more. You can see it in restaurants all the time. Just observe, how people treat others, and it tells you a lot about the person, how they treat waiters, how they judge or talk about somebody else or their friends. It's going to tell you, whether you can trust them or not.
I love
it's
you,
a
Dr.
reflection.
That's really, really, for me, is very important. I feel always so uncomfortable when I'm around the table in a restaurant and one of my guests or people that I'm with just try to be very not nice to waiters and or just, plays the game and is rude or just playful in a way that makes everybody uncomfortable. And for whatever reason, because the waiter or waitress needs to be nice, they cannot really defend themselves or just say, stop it, you jerk or something like that. This hurts my feelings so much, and I don't know how to stop people like that from doing this, because the people do that. People have this powers about them that they just try to push their opinion or push their reactions and just push people to react back, and sometimes the people who work they cannot do that. Then yes, people are very complicated. But I would like to come back to one more thing that bothers me, or I would like to focus on that. I love you, doctor. You have this beautiful accent. Obvious accent on radio is about successful people in America with an accent mainly. Then you are like the perfect star for me, for us.
I certainly have an accent.
I know, and I love it. I really think that's what America is. It's so many beautiful, wonderful, smart people and just working very hard with this unusual many, many accents. And I know that your father was a Lithuanian immigrant, which I feel almost like I'm your sister, because Poland and Lithuania,
this is
the same country.
I speak some Lithuanian.
Okay.
I don't.
Levels.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't.
And we believe that this is a really Lithuanian language. And I know also your mommy. Your mama was Peruvian-born immigrant. And I know you mentioned in your bio on your website how really unusual woman she was. And then, become...
Alana, I'm sorry. Alana, so your mother was... you say Peruvian?
Yeah, well, the funny part about it is that my mother was born in Lima, Peru. However, she was there only maybe like a couple of months, because soon after she was born, the family went to Cairo, and then she grew up in Cairo until the age of 4 or 5. Okay. So her native language was French originally.
Oh.
Then she never knew a word of French. Then, the family ended up moving to Mexico. So it's a whole melting pot, because her parents were from Greece and from Turkey.
Oh.
And
wow.
What an amazing family.
What an amazing family.
It was like all over, And my grandfather used to travel a lot, because he used to export silk. So that's why he used to travel all over the place. So that's how it became about. My father, on the other side, was born in Lithuania, and he immigrated to Mexico with nothing but what he was wearing, and the rest of the family stayed in Lithuania. Unfortunately, during World War II, they were mostly all of them exterminated by the Nazis. So that was like a very sad story of my father's side. But himself and two brothers and a sister survived and ended up in Mexico City. And my father wanted to originally come to the United States. However, at the time, the border was closed, so he ended up being very, very successful businessman in Mexico. He was a toy manufacturer and doll creator, and he had like almost like the equivalent to Barbie and Mattel in Mexico City. And
he became
very, very successful. My parents had five children. I had four older brothers. My oldest brother died of multiple sclerosis, and that's how I became interested in chronic illness.
Dr. Snyder. I knew that you had to be the baby in the family because let me explain it to our listening audience. Because if you've seen the Beverly Hills Bravo TV's Beverly Hills Housewives show, and you've seen your son Mauricio, who's very handsome, right? Well, if someone had saw your picture, I mean, you look like you could be his sister. I mean, you're so beautiful.
Thank you.
But I want to know what your secret is to stay so young looking, because you are so beautiful. I know part of it's genes, but you must have a great beauty vision. I mean, that you should share, because you look incredible.
Well, I think that never losing the child within oneself and always being playful, it's helpful. The attitude that one has is very, very important, and it helps to stay young. And the genes, obviously, you know, of course they're going to help. And, you know, this brings me to tell you, I really didn't need much of a plastic surgery, but I did end up doing a plastic surgery during the second season of Real Housewives. And how that came about, it was like kind of like very interesting, because during the first season, during my oldest granddaughter's graduation, I was, you know, just going from table to table, and the cameras were all around, and I was just saying hello to everyone and trying to, you know, being a family member, talking to the guests. I arrived to the table where Dr. Nassif and Adrian were, not even knowing at the time that they were part of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills show.
So, just to explain to our audience, Dr. Snyder, just to our audience. So one of the Beverly Hills Housewives, she's married to a very well-known Beverly Hills plastic surgeon.
Yes.
Right? So you already have a secret connection that none of us have. Oh, except that we have DJ. We all know, you know, me and Lauren, we know DJ.
Okay, and I would like to know, okay, that how this happened, that from the meeting, doctor, you just wind up to being on a table and just had a little bit work done on your face?
No, if your granddaughter is graduating from college, you know, you are going from table to table, making sure that everybody is attended well and what they're doing. And, you know, I'm kind of a social being. Any party, my tendency is to talk to people and get to know them and what have you. So when I arrived at their table and I was talking briefly to them and getting to know them, you know, they said to me, you know, your son told us that you are a doctor and you're a psychologist. Come and sit down with us. We have a couple of questions for you. And suddenly they started talking about their problems in their marriage and how they bicker with each other.
Yeah.
And that's how it came about, me talking to them regarding the relationship. Then I asked Dr. Nassif the question, well, what do you do? And he said, I'm a plastic surgeon. So then I said to him, oh, you know, would you think that I could use some plastic surgery? They edited that question out. It wasn't put on the show when it came out. And basically he said, you know, really, you know, you don't need much, but a little pull here or there, you know, it could definitely help you, you know, look younger. I said, I would love to do that. And it was dropping to that, like, in the back of my mind. So out of that, it came, like, you know, talking to my daughter-in-law and my son and asking them, you know, well, what do you think? And they were very supportive and what have you. And it's the first time ever in my life at the age of 61 that I had my first plastic surgery.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Now, did you hear that, audience? She said at the age of 61, because let me tell you something.
I'm 62 now.
You go look at a picture of
61.
You look like you're, I'm telling you, you look like you're 35 years old. You look amazing.
I agree.
Beautiful.
The pictures are so gorgeous. And, you know, I cannot wait, honestly, in the future to little help my face here and there, because I really think that especially when you are 50 years old and, you know, your children are in school already, and like you said, you have grandchildren, you see life passing you by, and you look in the mirror and you say, oh, my gosh, a little here and there will help. And then the courage. If you have a courage and you go after your goal, and then the results, which you have beautiful results, you know, is so amazing, then, yeah, I'm very happy for you. And
so
I'm sure
we didn't mean to put you on the spot, Dr. Snyder, but you just look so beautiful. I just wanted to point out just how great you look. And I think you're an inspiration to a lot of people. And I'm
to tell you the truth, if I didn't have the body that could match the face, probably I wouldn't have, to tell you the truth, I wouldn't have done it. I have to admit that, you know, because, you know, what good does it make, you know, to kind of like do a facelift and then you cannot wear sleeveless or, you know, anything, you know, that you can show your neck if everything is hanging.
Yes.
So,
good,
you know,
for you.
Well, don't you think, since you got Dr. DJ is a plastic surgeon, so don't you feel like plastic, sometimes for people to do plastic surgery, if it makes them feel better about themselves and helps with their perception of who they are, I think you should do whatever makes you feel good. Do you agree with that, DJ?
I totally agree with it. And there's been a lot in the media about bullying and, younger and younger children getting plastic surgery, and in certain circumstances I have seen dramatic changes in children with prominent ears, for instance, where we do ear pinning surgery, and the kids just come out of their shell, and you know, the same thing for adults, where they come in with, and most of the adults I see aren't the stereotypical plastic surgery folks. It's just like Dr. Snyder said, it's I have a little bit of, you know, a neck sag or this or that. You know, it's one thing that bothers them. They go through the surgery, and then they go about living their lives, and, you know, it makes them feel better about themselves. If we have the technology and it's relatively safe, why not?
I think as long as people go into plastic surgery with the idea that it's not going to change your personality. Now, I admit that if there was a surgery to change your personality, I'd be the first to sign up. I know I'm annoying sometimes. But I just think that, you know, that a little bit of this or that helps your self-esteem, I say do it. That's what I think.
Well, and Dr. Snyder, I mean, have you worked with a lot of folks? We do occasionally see people with body dysmorphic disorder. Have you worked with many people in that realm?
Well, there is some people that do have dysmorphic disorder, and I have not personally worked a lot with them. I have worked a little bit with people who wanted to do like fake sex changes, you know, it's kind of like a totally different story, or people who want to do like a more like internal changes, like with gastric bypasses, in order to control weight, which in turn will change, you know, their physiques and their outside. So you have to be careful also to work with the people that if their outside is going to change drastically, to prepare them for the new look of their physiques, you know, which is
probably... Dr. Snyder, with your practice, can you tell our audience just a little bit about what you specialize in your practice for our audience?
Yes, well, throughout the years, I have specialized in many things. As I was telling you, you know, originally, I wanted to specialize in chronic illness, especially because I had a brother with multiple sclerosis who passed away like 4 years ago. And I did write my doctoral dissertation on the personality factors that affect the people who have multiple sclerosis, you know, in terms of having a quality of life versus feeling miserable in their lives. So that was one of my initial interests. But then, you know, I started with a television show back in 1987 that it was called Open Line Psychological Consultation in Spanish. And that moved me into dealing, because of the questions and the audience, to dealing with people with eating disorders and sexual disorders. And that's how I came about doing a postdoctoral in sexology at UCLA and getting certified as a sexologist. So since 1987, I've been on and off on Spanish-speaking television, either as a guest or my own show. I had a pilot called Doctora Corazon, and that led me to dealing with, you know, relationship issues. So in general, you know, presently I'm dealing more with a few private practice that it deals more with relationships, motivating factors and things like that. And I also go to facilities where I deal with this, with the disabled or with the elderly, like in skilled nursing facilities.
So some gerontology issues you deal with that as well in your practice?
Yes.
Wow. I don't know how you, with everything that you're doing and all these boards that you're on, I don't know how you have time to eat or sleep. You're a busy lady.
Yes, you know, basically, you know, to become a member of association, you just have to pay a membership and, you know, that's it. And, you know, it's not that it takes from my time, but, you know, with my practice and doing all of this, and I'm, you know, kind of writing a book on relationships as well right now that kind of I'm editing right now. So,
practice as well, there's kind of one area that is interesting, is kind of most interesting. What area of your practice is most interesting for you?
What area of my practice is more interesting for me? Wow. You know, it has changed over the years, but since I've been so involved in the television shows, I've been having like a television segment every Friday night for the last 3 years that is called Sex and You in Spanish. I've been dealing a lot with sexology and the relationship and relationships, basically.
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about sex because I'm sorry, DJ, but I think you know, Dr. Ruth Westheimer, right? She sort of brought sex into the mainstream, you know, with her show, her radio show, and several years ago. But to me, you've sort of become the new, specialist on, you know, sexology and sexual dysfunction disorders. And it seems, and the great thing about television today is that it can teach and it can uplift and it can inform people. And I think that's one of the things that you're doing, which I so admire, is that you're not afraid to put yourself out there, Dr. Schneider, to help people with issues that people are sort of afraid to discuss, you know, in their own homes. So I really commend you for doing that, because I think that's missing today on TV, in either, you know, like Telemundo or even American television. There's no one like that today, I don't think. And I think that we need someone like you out there helping people with all these sexual disorders.
So, definitely, and it's, you know, we're living in an era in which people are afraid, you know, to talk, and with the teen mom reality show and the teenagers that get involved into sexuality without being careful and having the maturity to be parents. I don't think it's a good idea. The relationships, you know, which are going to be the, you know, the basis of family. You know, the family is the what creates the future of these, of the world, of this country. Yeah, so that's why most of my interest is in relationships and sexology.
Quick follow-up to what you were saying there. How would you, because I'm a new parent, I have a six-month-old daughter, how, when she gets to be what age, should I start talking with her about sex and relationships?
Seven.
Wow, sex and relationships. I think that you're really, since the moment that they're born, you're talking to them about relationships to start with. Because they're relating to you, and that's a relationship. Relationships with their siblings, relationships with their friends, relationships with their teachers. You know, there's all kinds of relationships that you're talking about. The modeling that they're going to see of their parents as to how they solve conflict, how they relate to each other, what are the values within the family system. So from birth, you're already talking about relationships. In terms of sexuality, you know, the child is going to be the one that basically is going to give you the tone as to when to talk about it. But we have to be careful not to jump. You know, when a kid asks you a question, where does my sibling come from? We better be sure what they're asking, because they may be asking if they're coming from school or from a party, mm-hmm. but not necessarily, you know, how were they born?
I'm still waiting for my parents to have the sexology talk with me, because I've not had it yet, and I'm 40 years old. I'm still waiting.
Don't worry, I never had one either.
Yeah, I didn't have one either. You know, actually, I have to retract on that. You know, my mother used to tell me all the time that the children were brought by the storks from Paris.
Oh, and I kept looking,
kept looking up in the sky, and you know, I said, where are they? But when I grew up and I started, like, seriously dating my ex-husband, I did have my father one day talking to me and giving me the talk that is important to arrive to the, you know, to the chuppah, you know, because I'm Jewish, you know, to arrive in white with the pureness of, like, being of virginity, which nowadays, you know, basically is not, doesn't have the importance that it had back then, especially in Mexico.
Yeah, you were 18 when you were married first, yes, and you had your child in the age of 19, and your father died, yes, and he never really saw coming to America, and you mentioned...
Ilona. So you have a beautiful daughter, you have a beautiful, talented daughter, so what age did you have that birds and the bees talk with your daughter?
You know, I still feel like sisterhood with Estella, because I was 18 when I had when I was married in Poland first time, and then I was 19 when I had my first child. That I will say I'm not the best exemplar for American young teenagers and tell them, you know, do not have a boyfriend or do not get married too early. And I will obviously tell everybody, you wait until you are minimum 25. 26 this time before you even think about getting married. But in Poland, like in Lithuania, like in Mexico, 13 years old girl was ready, you know, through family values and roots to be married. And that's what happened to me. And 12 years later, I was divorced. And then I got married again for 23 years. I was married to another wonderful man, and now my marriage is falling apart again. Doctor, I need your help. But yes, then I have two.
Okay, we're gonna have to talk about all of this, but maybe not right now.
Of course, Dr.
Snyder, here's the thing, Dr. Snyder. You're writing a book. I think you're an amazing woman, and I think that we would love to have you come back on the show and talk about other subjects. In more depth, because I think that people need to hear from you, and we need to have a platform for some of these discussions. And I think, you know, you would do us a great honor if we could have you back on the show over the next, you know, few months to talk about some of these other subjects that maybe are important to you. If you'd be so willing to do that.
I would like
to talk about
how to mend broken hearts. What about that? Because I really think it's so many, my friends are, you know, in a hurt, and myself also, then, you know, and how to get out of this sad funk, then you know that things are falling apart and maybe will never be the same. And then how do you come back to be even better from the relationship that fell apart and just not give up on the hopes and dreams and love? And I think this is when doctor like you can really take patient hand and say, you know, things will only get better, but you need to allow yourself to do what, doctor? I want to hear what.
Well, you know, you're making a point. You know, things will get better. We never know whether things are going to be better, but we know that they're going to be different. And I think that the important question to ask is, you know, are you happy where you are? And if you're not, you know, that's already giving you the answer. You know, and what's holding you back, you know, may be the fear of the unknown. And basically, you know, if you're courageous enough to look into the unknown and take a step, you're going to be opening new doors that will give you new opportunities, that will give you the chance for you to choose how you want to deal with those new opportunities.
So, Dr. Snyder, So if any of our listeners wanted to find out more about your practice, could you tell, you know, what, can you direct them to your website to go to?
Yeah, absolutely. They can, you know, email me at Dr. Estela, Estela with double L and an E at the beginning, Dr. Estela Snyder, S-N-E-I-D-E-R, .com. DrEstellaSnyder.com, or they can contact me via Twitter at Dr. Estela. You know, we'll start from that because I wouldn't want to, you know, give my phone on the air. But
well,
you can definitely contact me via email or via Twitter.
Or Facebook.
Well, you honor us, Dr. Snyder. You honor us by coming on our show tonight. And we really just can't wait to have you back. And dive into some of these really important issues.
And
I think you're a wonderful voice.
And LA Talk Radio Accent On page has downloads. Every time when anybody wants to repeat or listen again to our show, please go there, Accent on LA Talk Radio Channel 1, and of course on iTunes, which this show will be forever be allowed to be heard by anybody who wants to listen to Dr. Estela again, again, and again. And thank you so much, Dr. John Jones, Dr. Didi, Dr. John Johnson, too, because your firefly today was pretty, you know, medically very nice and clean. Ilona Europa, and of course, Stephanie Mack, who is very quiet, but boy, she's listening and watching over my English and my overall, you know, well-being. And of course, we love you, Dr. Estela, and I hope you will be becoming our guest maybe once in 2 months, 3 months, whenever you have time, because we have so many important questions to ask you.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor being with you, and has been very interesting, challenging to talk to all of you.
Thank you so much. And to say bye-bye, I have a song which is called Sorry, Sorry, You Broke My Heart, and it's sung by me, and I want to share this song with listeners. This is my premiere for today. Good night. We'll be right back.